In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." That is, in every aspect of how we live. We have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott, talking again today about some of our journeys with God. I must say that we have certainly found that underneath are the everlasting arms. You may not know how much of a worry wart you were listening to, but it is my nature to be very concerned about things. Although I have a wonderful husband who certainly knows how to travel, I've never seen anybody like him when it comes to talking with people. It doesn't matter what language they speak, even. He has a way of communicating in a friendly, relaxed, non-threatening way, and he certainly does know how to thread his way through customs officers and airport taxes and taxis whose drivers speak another language. I would certainly hate to have to travel, as we have been traveling, without my wonderful escort. God has given me the great privilege. Well, I had told you about a trip to an unnamed country yesterday, where dirt was being carted in wheelbarrows and tunnels were being dug by hand and walls were being laid, and there was no heavy equipment around. And I keep thinking of those words from a hymn, I Cannot Tell. That's the title of the hymn, and it says, "I cannot tell how he will claim his earthly heritage, how satisfy the needs and aspirations of East and West, of sinner and of sage." We went through remote little villages, mud brick houses, mud ovens, no color but mud, it seemed, on every side. Is there any beauty, any diversion, any love, or marital conflicts among these people? Those are the sorts of thoughts that went through my head. We saw rice paddies, nuclear plants, coal heaps, and then we found ourselves on an immaculately clean train, starting on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. This was a thrill for me, I have to say. We had a little stateroom. It had two beds in it. It had a little table and two comfortable places to sit. We had a little half bathroom, which we shared with the man on the far side. And there we were, hour after hour after hour, crossing the great Gobi Desert. Now that was a thrill for me, because when I was just a little girl, my father told me about two amazing women named Mildred Cable and Francesca French. They were, I believe, the first white women ever to cross the Gobi Desert. When we looked on the map, we discovered that there are actually three different Gobis. I think I'm correct in saying that they all belong in Mongolia, but it is a vast emptiness, a vast loneliness. Once in a while, we came to ordered fields where we would see a solitary person kneeling or squatting and working away with hand tools. Then there were hills, then a green valley with horses drinking from a stream, green pastures, two shepherds, two flocks of sheep, still waters, and of course you know what I thought about as I looked at those. And at 9 in the evening, we pulled into a station out on the vast, desolate beginnings, I suppose, of the Mongolian steppes. Officials came into the train. They handed us papers to fill out and examined our passports. The wheels of the train were being replaced because of a narrower gauge from that point on. And we were told that this railroad goes all the way to Moscow. So we filled out the papers four times, and twice after going to bed, we were aroused, searched, and questioned. But on the last attempt for these officials to figure out who in the world we were, they finally just gave up on us because nobody spoke English. At 2:15 a.m., we left the station. and we're now in Mongolia. We had had a good rest. Our stateroom was immaculate. We had clean sheets, pillowcases, new wool blankets, good pillows, a tiny shower, and a wash basin. 8:45 a.m. We had seen horses, cows, goats, dogs, and, most thrilling to me, camels, and one small deer or antelope. I wasn't quite sure what it was. We stopped in one town, and there were some charming little boys begging for handouts from the train windows. We gave them some cookies, and they pounced on them and tore away. The scenery was so beautiful that I thought of Edna St. Vincent Millay's poem, "O world, I cannot hold thee close enough. Thy winds, thy wide gray skies, thy mists that roll and rise, that gaunt crag to crush, to lift the lean of that black bluff. Lord, I do fear thou'st made the world too beautiful this year." Then we saw a herd of dromedaries, a smaller kind of camel, close up. And finally, at about 1 o'clock that afternoon, we were met at the station of Ulaanbaatar. I must confess that until I received my invitation to speak in Ulaanbaatar, I had never heard of it. It's spelled Ulaanbaatar. And it is, as most of you know, I suppose, the capital city of Mongolia. We were met there by a beautiful woman, 6'2", an American named Martha Taylor from Mississippi. She took us to supper at a Mongolian family's home, and we had meat turnovers and a salad of cabbage and carrots. June 6th. I spoke by interpretation to a Bible school. The students were such an earnest group of young people. Before I spoke, they had a prayer time when everyone prayed simultaneously and with great fervor, and then prepared to settle down and listen very attentively. In the afternoon, our hostess Martha took us on a beautiful drive to the countryside, as they call it, out of the city into great rolling hills, green grass, weird rock formations reminiscent of Colorado Springs. One immense rock was called Turtle Rock. You would have no trouble understanding why it was called Turtle Rock. It looked exactly like an immense turtle. And then we had, most interesting of all, a visit to a ger, G-E-R, yurt in Russian. Some of you have heard the name yurt. I had never heard of a ger, but it's the same thing. It's a round house. Starts with a framework, and then it's covered with skins and felt and heavy cotton, perhaps canvas. We were invited into the home of some friends of Martha's. Although they didn't know we were coming, they immediately began to cook for us. In the center of the house was an iron stove with a pipe. Around the circumference were brightly painted beds, 5 of them, on which we were invited to sit down. Our hostess immediately served us milk tea, as they called it. It was very weak tea with hot milk and, are you ready for this, salt. Very unusual. Then we had bread with a yellow sort of butter made by heating milk on the stove, whipping it 1,000 times, skimming the thick yellow whatever it was that looked like cream. And this apparently hardens into slabs. We had never seen anything quite like it. It didn't taste exactly like butter, but our hostess Martha told us that it was very unusual for people to have bread there. We learned that Mongolians normally eat nothing but meat and milk. Can you imagine a diet of meat and milk? Of course, they make every imaginable milk product that can be made, including what I have just described, this yellow hard slab. It was sort of butter. Then we had yogurt with sugar. And as we were about to leave, the lady of the house, our Mongolian hostess, began to boil lamb bits on the stove. She had been spending a great deal of time chopping lamb into tiny, tiny little pieces. And she was putting them on the stove for us. Our hostess, Martha, very politely declined and said that we were invited to dinner somewhere else, which was, of course, perfectly true. And she did so in a way as not to offend our hostess. We went then to the apartment of a girl named Mary Beth, where we had tea with a lovely group of new Christian girls, also Mongolian girls. We were taken to a performance put on by Mongolian dancers representing ancient civilization. Amazing, very strange kind of singing, strange to our ears. We would hardly call it melodious or tuneful. They seemed to be able to do things with their throats that we could never do. To my utter astonishment, when that performance was over, we met several foreigners who had read my books. A couple was not with the group that had invited me, but they introduced themselves to me as fans. Well, that does give one a start when you're in as out-of-the-way place as Mongolia. Can you imagine my utter surprise in such a faraway country? And it always causes me to think of the sovereignty of God. If Jim Elliot had not died way back in 1956 at the hands of ignorant people who thought that he had come to eat them, I would not have been in Mongolia, because I would not have been writing books. I suppose I would still be in Ecuador in the jungle. Journeys with God, so marvelous, so unimagined. How we thanked him for his faithfulness throughout those many weeks.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.